The UK's relationship with the EU. The first referendum on Europe. As stated earlier, the need to avoid future conflict was evident given the devastation caused by the European wars that had become global conflagrations in the first half of the 20th century. With the advent of the atomic age, the need for a lasting peace was even more imperative. Ironically, given Brexit, it was the British wartime Prime Minister, Winston Churchill, who first expressed the need for a United States of Europe in a speech given at the University of Zurich, Switzerland, in 1946. The idea of the ECSC was to use economic unification to achieve the political goal of peace. Economic unification was always meant to lead to closer political ties. Peace would be guaranteed as European institutions took over the responsibilities of national institutions. Britain's aim in joining the EEC in 1973 was to use the political institutions of Europe to drive its economic goals of achieving a wider and deeper free trade area. Britain always saw the individual nation states as the ultimate expression of politics, not European institutions. In other words, the goals of the original ECSC members were always political at heart, whereas the goals of the UK were resolutely economic. This fundamental difference is at the heart of the UK's difficult relationship with the EU. The post-war French president, Charles de Gaulle, recognised this fundamental difference in aims and vetoed the UK's repeated applications to join the European group, preventing UK membership until after his death in 1970. From the very beginning of the UK's membership of the European Club, there has been opposition from both the right and left of British politics. Some Conservatives always opposed Britain sharing political sovereignty with the Europeans, believing that laws and rules governing British citizens should only be produced by British institutions. But in order to join the common market in 1973, Britain had to make some changes to its domestic affairs to meet the standards required by the EEC. For example, it had to change its currency from the old pounds, shillings, and pence system to a new decimal system. Old imperial measures such as inches and feet, pints, and ounces and pounds had to be used alongside metric measures. These changes to British tradition, while superficial in terms of their effect on daily life, gave the impression that the British government was no longer in control of Britain's destiny, and that foreigners could impose their rules on the British people. Other changes made to meet European rules, such as the Common Agricultural Policy, went much deeper. On the left of British politics, there were those who saw the EEC as a plot by capitalists and big business to exploit the working classes of Europe. These left-wing anti-capitalists always opposed Britain's membership of this capitalist club. They believed that the political gains made by organised labour in Britain would be lost as international capitalists used European integration to remove workers' rights and reduce their wages. Having joined under the Conservative Prime Minister, Edward Heath, in 1973, the Labour government under Prime Minister Harold Wilson held the first ever national referendum in Britain's history on the question of whether the UK should remain in the EEC only 2 years later in 1975. Even then, one of the objections raised by those who opposed membership was that Britain had believed it was joining an economic arrangement, but instead had found that it was required to give away political sovereignty to a European superstate. The referendum returned a decisive 2-1 vote to remain, and this seemed to have put the question of UK membership to rest. Although defeated, those opposed to Britain's membership, particularly within the Conservative Party, did not give up and continued to do whatever they could to make their opposition heard.